Welcome back to the Tipsy Theology Podcast. This is episode 51. And for those watching, you can see that we are graced once again with the lovely and the beautiful, the Gusher King himself. Is that bad? Can I say that?
Gusher King?
Yeah.
I don't know. Sounds cool. I'm here for it.
He brought Gushers with him today.
Those are sour Gushers.
And I've never heard of them before.
It's a whole different.
So much better.
It's a whole different thing.
I'm so excited. It's been a while since I've recorded, and it's always funny when you come back into it for a while with anything. It's like, all right, do I remember how to do this?
Yeah. It's like riding a bike. You're just talking.
Yeah, that's all it is. And it's been cool. Half of it's been intentional because, my goal is to always bring something valuable to people that listen to the podcast.
Yeah.
And for new people. So I'm not one who, I don't want to just pump out content. I want to make sure I'm bringing something good. So I've been spending a lot more time, especially on the topic that we're about to go into. And I know you have.
Yeah.
And it's kind of been like a recent, somewhat recent.
Yeah.
Is that fair?
Yeah, we can talk about that. Yeah.
Okay, sweet.
Yeah.
So it's fun. I'm really excited to jump into it, but before we do that.
Okay.
You're a dry boy around here. So. I
guess. Gusher King, dry boy.
I've been studying how to give better nicknames.
I'm here for it. I don't have many nicknames, so.
And I will say it's funny because today when I asked what you wanted to drink,
I gave you two different things.
Yeah, but what was funny is because we were at church when I said that, and I know everyone's got their own opinions about stuff. I was like, oh, what do you want to drink tonight?
Yeah.
And then I could see a few people kind of turn their head.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a weird thing to just ask.
Yeah.
What do you want to drink tonight? Because normally it would be like, do you want to go eat something?
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Just to go right to drinks, I don't know.
And then I was like, cran apple?
Yeah.
So like people need context right now.
The funny thing is like I didn't even really see reactions.
That's so funny.
Just like, yeah, cran apple. I knew exactly what you were talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
So everybody else is like, what?
Weird segue.
I always love that. I always love that because like I have this weird thing about like I have an opinion about the best possible way to exit any room in any weird situation.
I like it
because I don't know where this came from, but like I realized there's a way to leave a room if somebody has just made it awkward in a public setting that I've never done this before because it would be insane if I even got to the point that I had to do this.
Yeah.
But like, let's say you're in like my brain immediately goes to like school cafeteria. You're in school cafeteria and somebody comes in, makes a big scene directed at you. And what do you do in that moment?
Mm.
Right. And maybe not everybody heard it. Like the best possible way to get out of that situation is to just drop your pants, leave them on the ground and then just walk out. Because half the people didn't hear what was going on.
That's true.
You know what I mean? So they just saw someone coming in causing a commotion. You're already there. You took your pants off. They're going, what did that person just say to that person that walked out without their pants on? Because no one is thinking about the fact that I just took my pants off.
They're like, what happened?
They're thinking about, why did that person cause that person to take their pants off? You know what I mean? It puts it all back on the other person. And it's not like you're naked. It's not like you're naked underneath. So it's like,
yeah.
At the end of the day, like no one would be like, what is wrong with that person that he took his pants off? Except the person that was talking to you.
That's so good. And at that point, there's nothing they can say to redeem themselves in anyone's eyes.
Not at all.
Like you're trapped.
Yeah, especially if it's like a high school cafeteria.
Oh, yeah, you're done.
And nobody cares. I mean, it's like, the kids take their pants off at high school cafeterias all the time. You know what I mean?
Like, that's it's true. Just, everyone's getting pantsed in high school and middle school. Well,
that, yeah.
Do people still do that?
I don't know. I haven't been in high school in a long time.
Yeah, same. I just realized that the other day. So
did that happen to you?
I just had my 30th birthday. I just got pantsed. No, I'm kidding.
For my 30th birthday, I got pantsed.
It was beautiful.
And I didn't do it to myself. Yeah.
And I realized it's like, oh, it's been 12 years since I was 18.
Yeah. That's a moment of silence.
It was kind of weird, especially because it was at camp.
Yeah, okay.
And so talking to some of these other people, like, oh, yeah, back in high school, you know, 4 years ago, I think it might have been Connor or something.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah,
he's
yeah.
younger. And I was just like, oh, high school?
Yeah, he's in college.
Or,
yeah.
Or even Jack, that was the other one. I was like, oh, yeah. That's crazy that yeah. I've lived almost twice as long as you.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, yeah, I mean, I'll be 35 in a couple weeks. So it's yeah. like, yeah, that's one of those things where, but I feel like, and I feel like this is probably true of you too. I won't project that onto you, but I feel
if
like
it's good. You're allowed to,
I feel like there's a certain age that you always feel like you are.
And, oh yeah.
And mine was 35. So I feel like I feel like I'm now the age that I always thought I was.
That's fascinating.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So I feel like
it makes sense, but I've never done that.
Okay. Did I state it that everybody does this?
Yeah.
Okay, my bad. I do
that
a lot.
But then you did correct it.
Okay. So. Yeah, I do that a lot where I'm like, yeah, everyone must think this thing that's in my head.
Because I have normal thoughts like other people.
Well, you don't know until you say it.
That's true.
You know what I mean?
I will say I actually said this earlier today. Is I feel more like an early, like, 22 than okay. when I was 22. So maybe that's kind of a weird way to say what you just said.
Oh, like now you feel like that.
Yeah, it's like I think I feel more like I'm that age than when I was that age.
Okay. I'm not 100% tracking with you.
No, I don't know if I'm tracking myself on that.
So at that age, you didn't feel that age, but now you feel that age.
No, I think I did feel that.
Well, it could
might
be like
a lost cause.
It here. Could be like an arrested development type of thing.
Where that's
like,
fair.
Where, because that's what I feel like. So what I'm talking about is like, I always felt like in my brain, I was 35.
Yeah.
Which sounds insane when you're 16, but like. It really wasn't until I was like 18, 19, 20 that I felt like I was in my 30s.
That's fair. And actually, I heard someone say that about you before, too. I can't remember who it was.
Oh, I don't know. But
oh, no, that was you. It was me talking.
It was me saying
when you're talking about
me.
One of your professors.
That was younger. I went to...
And I can't remember. They had a nickname for you. Called you like Oldie or something.
Oh, yeah. No, they called me Professor.
That's what it was. Yeah, that's what
yeah.
it was.
Yeah, when I was in college, one of my professors called me Professor.
That's right.
That was yeah. like my nickname. And I spent a lot of time in college in the professor's offices.
That's cool.
Like I would just go sit and talk to him.
Yeah.
And the thing that was like kind of funny is like they were like lonely. Like I which kind of makes sense.
It's
I
like
mean
you're visiting nursing homes.
A little I mean but they weren't all old, you know. I actually learned a lot. Like I feel like that was a big thing for me that I feel like is important for everybody, which is like school, both in high school, college, like all the way through. I feel like I learned as much not in the classroom as I did in the classroom. So like when I was in college, I did a lot of practical stuff, like setting up audio things, like doing musical yeah. things that weren't part of my degree. And then my degree helped me with the other side of what I do now. So it's like I needed both things.
Yeah.
But I had to be active in actually doing that.
That makes sense.
But yeah. So one of my professors called me Professor. That was his nickname for me, which was always really funny. It was funny.
That's funny.
But I feel like there's like to wrap that up.
Yeah.
I feel like there's a point that you either get to or you stay at. So like, I feel like I've always been 35. So I don't feel old. I feel the age that I've always felt.
Yeah.
But if you feel 22 now, then you might be Taylor Swift.
That's good.
I had that popped into my brain. I had to say it. No, I.
But you know, maybe there is something to be said
about Taylor Swift.
About Taylor Swift.
There's lots of things.
There are lots of things. No, so for myself, and you reminded me of it, is when I was younger, I spent most of my time around older people.
Mm, okay.
People that were, 20 to 30 years older than me.
Oh, okay.
So it's like, there's a decent age gap in there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I spent a lot of time around them because I was, working in... We had like our youth service and the main service, and I was always working in the main service.
Gotcha.
And so I was always just around those guys.
That makes sense.
Anytime they go play somewhere else, like I would be the guy to go with them.
Yeah.
And so now I'm actually spending time around my peers.
Yeah.
And so I think that's maybe part of why I feel younger. It's like, oh, I'm actually hanging out with people my age.
Yeah. So like in developmental stages, you were always the youngest one.
Yes.
So that makes sense. So you always just assume everybody's older than you.
Yes, 100%.
Yeah, I get that. But I think that there is an age where your brain just kind of stops. And
that's fair.
You know, like I used to ask people that, like even people that were like 50, 60 years old, I used to be like, "What? How old are you in your brain? Like, what does your brain tell you you are?" Because you see people all the time do things where you're like, dude, you're 55. And you just tried to like jump out of a tree.
Yeah, true.
So your brain is 25. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's awesome.
Like your, and I say brain, like your thoughts are 25.
Like how you perceive yourself.
Yeah.
And the things that you want to do.
Yeah. And I think that there's an element to that that's probably helpful.
Yeah. Cause I feel like, and this is a whole different topic, but I think it's still kind of interesting. And it reminds me of, is it John Eldridge? Is that his book, Wild at Heart?
Yeah.
Because I think he was the one who talked about people moving to different stages and like eras of their life.
Right.
And there's really not an age attached to it.
Taylor Swift.
Taylor Swift. The Eras Tour. Taylor Swift is everywhere.
That's in our next topic.
Taylor Swift?
No. In the one we're about to go into.
Oh, yeah.
They don't even know.
Oh, get ready, guys.
Stay tuned.
And so with that, it's like, I wonder if people just aren't always like getting older. So moving from like, oh, like the young, I can't remember all of his terms for that. So whoever does know it, they're going to get mad.
Oh, John Eldridge.
Yeah.
So in the stages of life.
When he's like, oh, you're like a young, like a warrior. And it's like, you're trying to prove yourself.
Yeah.
And then at the end, you become, hopefully become like a sage where you're then not trying to accomplish or achieve anything. Except for imparting wisdom to the people that are coming up still.
Yeah, why is that so hard to transition?
I don't know.
Like, that's probably what the whole book is about. Yeah. I feel like I read it at some point. But, meaning like, I think that no matter how quick or long it happens, that's a weird way to say that.
Yeah.
The transition of those phases of life... I feel like you should want them. You know what I mean? Like you should want to, like, when you've completed something, be happy that you're done with it and moved on to the next thing.
Mm.
But I guess like if your identity is in being a warrior and then you have to then become the sage.
Yeah.
It's like...
It's a hard transition.
It's better though if you do it yourself.
Yeah.
And I think that's the whole point of the book.
Yeah, it's true.
Is like it's better if you don't have to have someone else tell you, hey man... You're not a warrior anymore. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. It actually happened to me recently.
Really?
But me telling somebody else.
Oh.
And they despised me for it.
Yeah, but that's on them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, it's true.
Depending on how you said it, in what context.
You're old. No, I didn't.
Come on, Grandpa.
Get going. Move it or lose it, Gramps. I got stuff to do. But anyway, we're drinking Arnold Palmer.
Yes.
It's a hard segue.
Arnold Palmer.
Arnold. Did I slur that one?
Hey, so I think that...
Arnie Palmy?
Arnie. I like that. Say that one more time.
The Arnie Palmy?
Yeah, give me two of those.
All right.
Yeah. So there's another golfer who's not related to Arnold Palmer at all.
Tiger Woods?
No, I mean, yes, that's there. That is, there's many other golfers, but who also has the last name Palmer. And I think his first name is like Ryan or something, but he also has a signature drink.
I just saw how tall this was.
You need to zoom in on your eyes. The color of that is slightly disturbing.
I chose clear glasses because people who come in halfway won't know what you're drinking.
They have to watch from the beginning. That's who comes in halfway?
I'm sure somebody does.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if there's like a clip or something, I don't know. Or people just jump ahead.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, I don't know.
But another golfer.
Okay, so the other golfer, Ryan Palmer. I don't know. I could get his first name wrong. But his last name is definitely Palmer. He has his own signature drink, which this is sweet tea lemonade.
Mm-hmm.
And his is sweet tea and pink lemonade.
Oh.
So same last name, slightly different drink.
That's interesting.
What a brilliant idea.
It is really good. Because they're going to think it might be the other guy, but...
Well, it automatically is... It's something that's proven.
Yeah, true.
And pink lemonade is a color difference. It's not really that much difference in the taste.
But people value it more sometimes.
And because his last name is Palmer, they automatically trust it.
That's so good.
So he didn't even have to market anything.
That's so good.
I think it was... is it not... It's HTO or something?
The place, shop?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah, HTO.
Yeah, that's, I don't know why it's so hard to say, but.
We both are, yeah.
But, yeah.
Cheers to you.
Arnold Palmer.
And Ryan, this isn't your stuff.
No, this is not for you, Ryan.
This is Arnold time.
It's a little gritty.
It is a little gritty. It's been. Is it because it's a little tainted?
No, I don't think so.
It's because it's diet. I picked up the wrong one.
No, I think it's fine though. It's probably smart because honestly, in those like the preservatives and the extra sugar.
Oh yeah.
To keep it on the shelf.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
But it's good. It's been a while since I've had this drink, and I'll be very honest. I'm going to get a lot of hate for this maybe, but I'm not like a huge lemonade fan.
Why would you get hate for that?
Because I feel like everyone loves lemonade.
I mean, people on the corner that sell it when they're 5 years old?
Yeah. Those guys are coming for me.
Hey, stop hating our lemonade. We're trying to sell it over here.
I have like an army of 5 year olds.
I don't
have
enough nickels. I need more nickels.
That was like the scariest moment with Girl Scouts when they started taking like Venmo and credit cards.
I was going to say, explain more.
Yes.
Oh, because you had no excuse?
Yeah, I was like sorry, cash. No cash.
Yeah.
And I can't tell them like, no, I want to buy all of them, but I shouldn't.
I have the perfect out for that.
Mm.
And this also works with like anytime somebody...
Do you pull your pants?
No. I do not do that.
Bad timing.
No. They're not trying to attack me.
That's true.
It feels like that sometimes, though. No. It's like, and also when you're like at a grocery store and you're checking out, and someone says like, "Do you want to donate to something, something, or round up to this thing, or do the best response is not today." But you say it in like a really nice way.
Yeah.
You're not like, not today. You know what I mean? Because then that's, you might as well just like walk away.
You're an antagonist. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You just go, not today. And then no one ever responds to it.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
You got some tips and tricks here.
Because you're not saying no.
Yeah.
So you're not like, no. And so the way they receive not today is like, well, he's either in a hurry or like, he didn't have change today.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But honestly, I don't know what they think.
Dang.
I just know that every time I've said it, I've felt like the exchange was okay. Yeah.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
Not today. Yeah.
Wow. That's like Andrew, my old roommate. He used to always say, when he'd be like, "Hey, you want to do something later today?" It's a possibility. Like, that's, are you going there? It's a possibility. It usually means no.
Well, I was going to say, knowing Andrew, that's, yeah, that's a very, he's a very sweet guy. I think I said that last time.
Yeah.
But that's definitely a, yeah, you're not going to see me there.
No. But there's a small chance that something might change my mind.
If I literally have absolutely nothing to do and too much energy, I might end up there.
Which won't happen.
But he's a very chill guy.
He is.
So, he's not coming.
He's not going.
Yeah, it's not bad, right?
No, it's not bad.
You can't really sip it though, because it just, you kind of, it like has a film of water on top.
Yeah,
I mean, that might be
because of the ice.
Yeah, maybe.
Bad timing on my side. And I didn't. I should have brought like a cup of ice out here because my cubes are almost gone.
It's fine.
We'll work through it.
I mean, for me, it's fine.
Okay, good. I shall endure. Well, today we're going to talk about, well, actually, like, a lot of things. Do you want to say it?
No, I mean, well, do you want me to say it?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So Paul said, next podcast. I mean, we kind of hinted at it on episode 49. But last time he said, all right, we got to get to the next part on the next podcast. And he texted me and said, we need to. Ooh, I'm seeing the unseen realm over there.
Oh yeah.
I don't know if I can get too much into that.
It's like a textbook.
Yeah, yeah.
So good, but there's a lot.
Well, one of the So the topic today is, and I'm not sure exactly what you said. So you want me to just make
it? Yeah, make it up.
Okay, so our topic today that we were talking about on Tipsy Theology, a dry episode. Is giants and demons.
Yeah. Yeah. And I asked you, I remember I said, are you ready to talk about that? And you said, let me think. I could probably do 2 hours easy.
I do want to say up top that it is a topic that you could go so many different directions because there's a bunch of literature on it.
Yeah.
So people have been talking about it for thousands of years, if not longer than that. And it's a very prevalent thing, I think, to all humanity.
Yeah.
And maybe not the giants part so much unless you interacted with a giant, but there's a lot of relationship between giants and demons historically. So we can get into that. But I do want to say, like, I don't know what I'm talking about. So my speculation is just that. It's speculation. Yeah. It's what I've heard from other people who are much smarter than me that have spent more time studying this, who also might be wrong.
Yeah, true.
But I think one of the things that is fascinating for me, like the book, The Unseen Realm. I haven't read it yet, and I want to, but the thing that I love about the concept of it is that it's a supernatural reading of scripture.
Yes.
That's at the basis, that's what it is.
Yeah.
It's Dr. Michael Heiser, who, wasn't he a big part of Logos?
Mm-hmm.
So the...
Yeah, he was fundamental in that. He actually wrote a lot of the articles that are in there, too, or at least was one of the writers. If you do like a...
So what is Logos? I feel like this brings a lot of validity to who he is.
Yeah, which I think is important.
Yeah.
Because
you're probably going to mention him in a few times at least.
Probably.
Yeah.
Because he's been... One of the things that he does say as well is like he didn't invent this stuff either. He's... And this is where... This
and
is,
all good scholars say that.
Yeah.
Which is why...
Just working on...
Which is why I said it.
Brilliant. He's playing 4D chess over here.
Doing what I can.
That's good. It's so good. I need to learn some. I need to start taking notes.
My mind is sharp tonight.
Yeah, that's good. Like I said, mine's. I'm working on it.
I'm with you.
I'm getting it there.
Dr. Michael Heiser.
Yeah. So
Logos software.
One of the things that he says is.
What is Logos software?
Good question. Man, they need to sponsor me on this now. So it's a Bible software,
right?
But it's also more than just that. So I use the free version because I'm.
It's not pretty rich. Expensive.
It is very expensive. And
for good reason.
It is geared toward pastoral leaders and scholars.
Yeah. It's a major resource to churches. Yes.
Yeah.
On the pastoral level, mm-hmm. in for their preparation to teach the Bible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it not only on the simplest side, it's got all the different translations in there. But one of the biggest things that I love it for is its word studies.
Right.
As you can pull up a word study, and it'll show you everywhere in Scripture that that word was used. The context, the way it was translated, the definition behind it.
Yeah.
Some historical context to it, if it applies. And you can also just do some comparisons with all of that. And see how it works together and what that looks like. So that's like on the most simple side, how powerful it is.
Right.
But then you can add in other texts and like you can take your entire library and upload it all into Logos.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And do searches on all of that thing, all those books at one time.
Oh, because it has an expanded library too, right? Mm-hmm. So you can you can keyword search stuff.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Which is, and the one thing I will say on the price wise, if you're someone to use all those things, it's so much cheaper to get Logos than to buy all those books.
Absolutely.
Because some of those books are hundreds of dollars.
Yeah, and some of them are way out of print.
Yes.
Like there's a lot of stuff that's just not, you can't get it.
Right.
And if you can, yeah, it's like you might find one copy for $500 on eBay.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Yeah. I mean, it really is a, these chairs are a little squeaky.
It's a little squeaky.
I feel like I need to say that because, you know, it might be the sweet tea.
<It's> hitting.
Yeah, so and so I don't really know a ton about Dr. Michael Heiser.
Okay. Yeah.
I know that he passed away about a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that. And so I don't like he's a person that I think I've been influenced by because of the people that he's influenced without reading his book. And I think we all
done a lot
say
of
that.
Stuff with like Bible Project. He's been a huge resource for them as well.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Because I think him and Tim Mackey went to school at the same time.
Oh, I thought he was much older.
I think he's older. So I don't know if maybe he was teaching there or something.
He might have been.
But I know they interacted.
Okay.
At the same school.
Yeah, and there's a guy, Joel Metamame, something like that.
Yes.
And he's like...
I don't know him as well. But.
Okay. Yeah, he was kind of like... Heiser's like last like that's doctoral right. student.
Yeah.
And so
he interviewed him on a lot of newer YouTube videos, the later ones.
Yeah. Yeah, so he's kind of carried a lot of his work on and stuff like that.
That's cool.
But yeah, that is one of the things that's cool about him. And honestly, that's cool about any good scholar is that they're always referencing and collecting other things.
Yeah.
Cuz that's one of the things on the topic when we get to it, is there's a lot of things that the early church within the first 300 to 500 years mm-hmm. of the church just believed.
Yes.
That we don't at all, mm-hmm. or at least we don't even talk about.
Yeah.
And it was part of their worldview.
Yeah.
And 300 to 500 years is, that's many generations.
Mm.
So you're not talking about like, I mean, it's this person taught this person taught this person. And just to understand it on that level for that long, I mean, yeah.
I mean, that's actually, that's one of the big questions that I have still, because I don't know if I've found a definitive answer yet, or at least one that satisfies me well enough. Because my question is, especially when we do talk about, you know, giants and demons, it's like, why is it now, why is the church kind of so afraid to talk about it? But with that, there's a caveat, and I say that because I feel like now, because this is something that I've been talking about to some capacity for probably 8 to 10 years at this point.
Yeah.
And so many people 10 years ago were like, I don't even want to touch that conversation.
Right.
And like you mentioned, like the Book of Enoch, for example, and everyone just like, you're a heretic. I don't care what you have to say. I don't even want to entertain a thought.
Yeah.
But now, today people are seeking out those conversations.
Of course.
And they're like, oh no, I want to hear about this.
Yeah.
And I find that really interesting. But it's kind of like, for me, the question that I've been trying to answer is like, what happened here? Because there's clearly a shift from when this stuff was written and the people that it was written about to then into the early church and then into modern day.
Yeah. I mean, so many things happened.
So I'm curious to hear your thoughts. Yeah, I've got some of myself.
But. Well, like the ebbs and flows of history is something that I think affects every single topic and every single thing.
Yeah.
I think the amazing thing, I feel like the amazing thing about the Bible, the written word of God, is that, or the spoken word of God, I guess, you know, we have it written down, but there's many times where it was just oral tradition.
True.
And time of that. And the Book of Enoch is a good example of that, where like potentially the Book of Enoch was oral tradition for a really long time before it was ever written down.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the thing about the ebbs and flows of history is you have these moments where things turn. Like one of the big ones I feel like in Christendom is like the history of Christianity is Constantine.
Yeah.
I feel like Constantine's time like both preserved things and completely destroyed things.
Yeah.
In a way that's kind of confusing that it ever happened. Like in my mind, I look back on Constantine and go like, I don't think that he was doing the will of God. Like I don't like there's some or he was doing the best he could, which I think is probably always true.
Yeah. That's kind of how I tend to think about it. It's like what he did wasn't really great. Like in the end, as far as how it all ended, it's like this wasn't the best for Christianity.
Right.
But it was definitely, I think it was still good.
Yeah, and it definitely was a marker where because of what Constantine did, you have the heritage of the preservation of scriptures.
Yeah.
So there is that side of it, that's which true. Is a massive part of it. And that's why I say like the written or spoken word of God is, I feel like, a major, like there's a beauty in the simplicity of it, meaning it's as simple, the scriptures, it's as simple as it needs to be for people to find Jesus.
Yeah.
And as complicated as the mystery of the God of the universe.
Yeah.
So it's both things. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I think historically having that and looking at the tradition of how that's passed along is there's beauty in that where you kind of look at it and go, well, there was a generation of people. There were tens of generations of people that had this worldview that is written down, but it's not written down in the Bible.
Yeah.
And but they were the main readers and followers of the Bible.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just like we do. I mean, my tradition that I grew up in and the city I grew up in and the climate of like both politics and church growth and development and all of that stuff in my city as I grew up was part of my worldview that shaped everything that I read, everything that I did. And so the thing is like my worldview, my like in this era, for me, I've seen a shift. And I don't think you quite went to this question, but I've seen a shift in everything is natural. So like everything's very consumer based. I feel like we're on the other side of that in the church world where things are starting to become less. And I think the reason, unfortunately, I feel like the reason for that is actually world influence, meaning world influence was Industrial Revolution, like the invention of the weekend, and I'm not talking about, you know, the guy from Toronto, but I think he's from Toronto.
But I'm glad he exists.
Well, yeah.
at least his music. I like his music.
Yeah, we could talk about halftime shows too if you want.
Oh yeah, that's,
on this topic,
we'll save that for Taylor Swift. Okay. Okay.
Yeah, in this topic specifically, but
actually, yeah, that's fair.
but like the invention of the weekend, but the invention. So now there's leisure time. There's like all these things that are added in. So you get the growth of America and all that stuff, and the churches are influenced by it. So as the churches are influenced by it, everything is very materialistic. Everything is what you see. Mm-hmm. And we're fighting against, like, which I think was a massive philosophical mistake that was made, that Christians couldn't understand that science was explaining creation,
right,
versus it being its own religion.
Yeah.
To their credit, like, scientists were, they would call it a belief. So because that language was being used, like, that was always my big thing. I feel like in the early 2000s, there was a big,
debate season for, like creation evolution was,
it was like kind of the height of it.
Yeah.
And what am I keep wanting to say Antichrist, theist, anti-theist.
Like atheist?
Thank you.
I was like, it's too simple. I don't know.
Thank you. Yeah, you had like the neo-atheist, you had the new atheist, you had like all these debates happening, and they were all based in Darwinism. And
yeah. And then that kind of birthed postmodernism. I can't say this.
Yeah, but and now we're in like post-postmodernism. Like,
right.
Like we're post-postmodernism. And so like there's this weird thing, because even when I was in college, we were talking about modernism and what it was, and that we were in the postmodern space.
Yeah.
But the truth is we weren't. We were exiting the postmodern space.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think the postmodern space had a height moment in the early 2000s when you had atheists and Christians debating each other on large stages and just going after each other. And my problem with that was that they didn't realize they weren't using the same language. Their starting point was wrong.
Yeah.
So like most of the atheists, when they were speaking from an evolutionary standpoint or from a Darwinism standpoint, they were speaking with science language, and the Christians were speaking with Christian language, and so their terms were mismatched.
Yeah, that's huge.
So like even when we get into like the conversation of apologetics and Christians defending their faith, I feel like that was misrepresented during that time. Mm-hmm. And like, I could be wrong. I just feel like that was my view of it, where I looked at it. I was like, I feel like I, and maybe this is something that I feel like I'm gifted in with facilitating conflict, facilitating or like helping people work through conflict, is being able to step back for a minute and go, okay, you guys are both talking about the same thing, but you're using the wrong language, so you think you're confused.
Yeah,
like you think that you're arguing about this, about an agreement you have.
Yeah,
and so the thing is like, the atheists were saying they believed in evolution. Well, they didn't believe in anything. That's the whole point of atheism. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So like, you didn't believe in that, and even if you say that's the standard by which I live. Well, there's a measure of belief in that. So like at the end of the day, the problem was they were saying, I don't believe in belief, which from a philosophical standpoint basically means you might as well just not talk at all. Just like go, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like just go live by yourself in a cottage.
Yeah.
Because otherwise there's no reason for human discourse because what's the point if you don't believe in anything?
Yeah.
Because on a philosophical level, you can get to the point of like, well, how can you prove that I'm sitting in front of you right now?
Right.
You know what I mean? So when you get to that point, it's like, well, now, like they just never define terms.
Right.
And that always bothered me. So Constantine.
Yeah. And honestly, actually what you said kind of really leans into where my mind went with this question too.
Okay. Giants and demons.
Yeah, well, especially even like, how did our worldview shift so dramatically from there?
Right.
And like, what happened here? And the two big moments that I think of, one of One of them is St. Augustine.
Okay.
So we have, at that time, St. Augustine to be the early church.
That makes me a little upset, too. Like, not that you said that, but St. Augustine, St. Augustine's influence on the church.
Oh, he had a massive influence.
But he was so young.
Yes.
And he was also, like, he was plagued with lust.
Mm-hmm.
And I think not enough people talk about that in church, maybe. Yeah. That it's like St. Augustine.
Yeah.
Wrote the Confessions, which is a journal entry.
I actually have it right over there.
Yeah, it's a journal it's a journal entry about how he can't stop lusting.
Right.
And how
he
wants to put his flesh down.
Mm-hmm.
And then you look at all the things he influenced in Christendom, and almost all of the stuff he influenced, you can take its root back to that fear he had in his own flesh, which is like a weird,
Which is, this is, might make this a little bit ironic. And also for the other people out there, because I typically say St. Augustine, and I said St. Augustine this time, because Florida has influenced me.
Sorry.
So for the people that are like, that's not how you say it. I know the other way. but so one of the things that, because he was,
I'll adjust.
Was he 380? Is that when he was?
I'm not going to guess.
I think it was somewhere around there. Oh, it was early church. But so he was one. He has a quote. I think it's in.
Well, he's at the council, right? Or no, he's pre-council. Because council is 530, something like that.
Council was, I think, before him. Like Council of Nicaea and everything. I think he.
Oh, okay.
I think he played a role to some degree, but. I'm not gonna say facts on that because I don't know for sure.
I don't know that people care about dates.
They probably don't.
Yeah.
But in the City of God, one of his books, he has a quote where he's basically talking about Christianity and how we're interpreting the Bible in science. And he I might have it written down somewhere, but essentially what his quote was saying is like, let's stop interpreting the Bible in a weird way, like the supernatural stuff. Let's kind of take a chill pill on that, because all the science community is going to laugh at us and they won't believe.
Yeah.
So that was a big influence that he had was
Sons
like
of Seth.
Yeah, he was a big one that pushed that, which that's I've a, talked about on here before.
That statement
about
is
how
a
ridiculous
mass,
it is.
But what I just said is a huge leap forward.
Mm-hmm.
Of a statement to anybody who doesn't know what we're talking about.
Yes.
Because and just a brief aside.
Yeah.
The conversation that we're going to get into or are getting into is one that I would not have been able to have a year ago.
Hmm.
So it's literally a year, probably less than a year. Like you mentioned earlier, like 8 to 10 years.
Yeah.
For me, it's been like less than a year.
Yeah, which is wild.
And we'll talk about this because I want you to finish your point about like what my worldview even was up until a year ago.
I'm curious about that.
Yeah.
And actually, so this is kind of where I definitely wanted to spend time because
so
I think...
So finish your thought though.
Okay, yeah. And then I'll say what I'm going to say.
Okay.
So that was one of St. Augustine's thing that he talked about.
There you go.
Thank you. Whew, I can do it. There you go. and so when you think about like the influence that the world has, like they're around that this is
right.
Like the sciences are huge, and philosophy and a more materialistic view of the world is emerging in that point, and it's becoming very popular. And we look
at, but I guess Paul was that way too. Is really Greece, right?
Yeah, Greece was huge, and they were philosophers,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's...
And that's like the idea of reasoning and reason. I mean, that's what Paul did with all of them when he spoke to them. He reasoned with them about why you can believe the Gospels.
Yeah, so the new atheist movement is just Greece all over again.
In my view, and...
Except they actually did believe in gods.
They did, yeah.
And we're going to talk about that.
And that's where I think now, in like the new atheist, and kind of where we're at, is really the full saturation of what started then.
Yeah.
And so the other reason I say that is because...
Would you say there are atheists?
I think so.
Okay. I feel like that's going away.
I think it's niche. Like, it's hard... I think it's hard to be an atheist.
Now.
Yeah, especially now.
Like within the last 5 years, I would say.
Yeah, but I think early 2000s, I think it'd be much easier to be an atheist.
For sure.
But then I was going to say, so jumping forward from there, the next big moment that I thought of was Galileo.
Okay, yeah.
And he has, I mean, two really big quotes. One of them, it's cool, it's fun just his story of his battle with the church and the science community at the time.
Yeah.
And I think there are people on both sides that like to defend the church in this. And be like, it was really the scientific community. It's like, yes, it was the scientific community, but it was also the church too, because they were trying to work together.
Control.
Yeah. They were trying to work together on like, let's manage this so yeah, we can keep our control. But one of the big things that Galileo said was the Bible can teach you how to get to heaven, but not the way the heavens work.
Oh, wow.
It's not a perfect quote, but that's essentially what he said.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I was like, man, that is such... So what's interesting to me is that's where I see two big switches. And Galileo is in the mid to late 1800s. So it's like, that's a lot of time in between
St.
Augustine and Galileo. But we see the mindset shift. Him being like, let's not make the Bible ridiculous for the science people.
Yeah.
And then we have Galileo is like, why are we considering this at all?
Yeah.
And I think that kind of leads into, then we jump to the 2000s into today. It's like, we've had the debates. We're not on the same page. You know, we basically, Christianity lost, I would say, a majority of those in the public's view.
Yeah.
And then, so now, but I think now we're at a weird place where people are experiencing the supernatural now in their own life.
That's actually a really powerful statement that I hadn't thought about. But the debate between Christians and atheists in the early 2000s.
Yeah.
The Christians lost that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and yeah, I wouldn't want to talk too much further about that, but yeah. I don't think that was ever, like, no one just stands up and goes, "All right, Christians, you lose." You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But in a lot of ways, we did lose that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that what's happening now is actually external influences. So like one of the biggest things about the book of Revelation is that it kind of points to this fact that the world's worldview, like the way everybody's going to see everything is essentially, it's going to be really hard for anybody to be atheist, meaning they don't believe in any God. Or gods at all. And the truth is I think Revelation paints a picture that every knee will bow.
Yes.
That and tongue confess that Jesus is Lord. But in before that happens, I think every person, like the great tribulation and thousand year reign and like everything in everything that's listed out is something where I mean, the Antichrist is going to stand in the temple and declare that he is God. And the truth is like, and that's what Revelation says. So at that point, that basically means that the world's not going to be like, there are no gods. Because there's also this turn where the supernatural space will be unveiled.
Yeah.
And there's going to be chaos on the earth.
Yeah.
And in that moment, no one's an atheist.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so absolutely. Like the Bible points to this growing and this end of the Gentile age where it's moving in a, everybody's going to acknowledge that the world is a supernatural space.
Yeah.
And when that happens, no one will be atheist.
Right.
Everybody will be some type of theist.
Yeah.
You might have lingering agnostics. But I think they would more so just not care about anything versus not care about, you know, or not believe that there are any gods at all.
They just don't want to deal with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that kind of even points back to like Paul and Rome and like the idea that like they were all there trying to worship. They all knew that there were supernatural things that happened because they witnessed them.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't know which one to worship. So they worshiped all of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's actually a big part of like, so I think, I think giants and demons, I think maybe this is a good launching point because this is some one of the things that I always think about with this, is I used to think that in the Old Testament, like an easy example that probably everybody will know is the golden calf.
Yeah.
I used to think that when Aaron fashioned the golden calf, because Moses was on the mountain too long, which was like, you know, 40 days.
Yeah. Which is a long time.
Like, I mean, I guess like, yeah. I mean, for the fact that they had literally witnessed a sea parting, they had been walking with a pillar of fire by night and a pillar of cloud by day, right? They're seeing physical, tangible manifestations of God.
Yeah.
And then Moses is gone for 40 days.
Right.
And what do? They don't, here's the thing. They don't, this is one of the things, I used to just think that everybody back then was dumb. Like, I thought that they were actually just ignorant. And the thing is they were ignorant, but they weren't unintelligent.
Right.
So there's a big difference of that.
That's a good way to put it.
So they weren't unintelligent people, but they were ignorant to what was going on, which is why they did what they did.
Yeah.
Because, like, worship no other God beside me. Like, that is, even when Jesus sums it up, he says, love the Lord your God. And so the whole thing is that, like, the main sin is idolatry. But the thing is there was ignorance there where the children of Israel weren't trying to worship another God. They were trying to worship the God of Israel. But they didn't, they had seen him tangibly. And so they told Aaron, hey, we want to worship the God. Like, we want to worship Yahweh. So make us something that we can see tangibly to worship. But their understanding was that, I used to just think it was like a trophy, like a golden calf, like an image or an idol, what we would call it, or just a statue would be an easier way to say it. That it was literally just whatever that material was. But the fact is what's actually true is that material objects can be possessed by spiritual beings. So what they believed is that when the golden calf was made and there was an offering given to it, that the spirit of God, the God of Israel, would then inhabit the golden calf. So they weren't worshiping what they thought was a false idol. They were worshiping the God of Israel, who they hoped was inhabiting the golden calf. So what they were doing was kind of correct in their ignorance.
When you talk about that way too, like that's how they've always known to do it. And I think to what you're saying too, that we, when we don't know how to do it because it was kind of being invented at the time. Like that's what Moses was out there doing, like figuring out like, how do we do this? And they're like, well, we're going to do it, like you just said, the way we know how to do it. And so let's go ahead with that. Because I think that's, I mean, that goes into even, and people love to make fun of like all the, like the Levitical laws and just all the laws and like, oh, look at all these do's and don'ts and blah. It's like, yeah, but we can say those were right or wrong or appropriate or inappropriate. But what was, what mattered was we don't know how to do it. And we want to know how to do it.
And if you look at most of those Levitical laws, they were helpful to humanity. So it was like, look, like your gut health is important. And the things that you eat will affect your gut health. Which then affects your brain. It affects your whole body. So, and we know that now. But they didn't know that. So God gave them ways and things to prepare food properly so that they would have good gut health. And you like, and we just don't look at it like that. We look at it and it's like, well, why did they have to do all these things? Or why do we have to do all these things? It's like a little kid who just like wants to run in the lake. It's like, no, there's alligators in there.
You can't just do that.
You can, if you want to, go and do whatever you want, but you're not going to be my people. And the reason why is because you're going to be running into things that will harm you.
Mm-hmm.
And if you just obey me, you'll have life and you'll have it abundantly.
Yeah.
And not because you're sticking to my rules that I just want to have people do rules.
You're right.
You know what I mean? It's like, no, these actually are beneficial to you because mm-hmm. I know more than you.
Yeah.
And that's one of those, it's obedience. I feel like obedience in the Bible is like being obedient is the act of humbling yourself, which is all you're doing. In order to love God, you obey his commands.
Yeah.
To show that you love God, all you have to do is say, you know more than me.
Yeah.
You're greater than me.
Yeah.
Your name is higher than mine. That's all you have to do.
Yeah, that's huge.
And then you act on that.
Because that's like even, I mean, there's so many things which takes too long to go into examples of all of them. But it's like, yeah, there are so many things that the Lord tells us to even today, at least in my life. Like there's things where I feel prompted to do something. And it doesn't really make any sense. It kind of seems benign sometimes.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, actually that had a real world consequence that was positive. If I obeyed it.
Right.
And it's like, I'm actually healthier now because I listened to that.
Yeah, exactly.
And it didn't make any sense at the time. It was just a thing to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah. So I think we're a little bit more pastoral in this conversation.
We've definitely gone that way.
Do we want to?
But yeah, so like to ramp it up a little bit more. And I guess I was going to say earlier that it's kind of intentional the way we're approaching it right now. And the reason is because, like you said, it took you a year to kind of be ready to even talk about this. And so it's a hard conversation to have because it sounds like one thing when it's really another thing.
Yeah, that I think that's where I come from. So
yeah.
I grew up in a tradition that was kind of came out of, it had Methodist and Assemblies of God influence, but was really more influenced directly by Word of Faith movement, Kenneth mm-hmm. Hagin. And the thing is there's a lot of literature, and I've kind of tried to look back on it, and there is some things, but I didn't dig too deep into it. But there's conversations around demons and spiritual things. But a lot of it was more like, I feel like the tradition that I was in was more like the authority of the believer. Like that was a big phrase.
Oh yeah.
Which is essentially like, it got messy because the purity of the statement, the authority of the believer, is that the believer in Jesus has the authority in his name. So like he said, in my name you'll cast out demons.
Yeah.
In my name you'll do these things. The authority of the believer got messy, like I even have a hard time saying Word of Faith. Because it has such a negative connotation now.
Right.
And rightly so, it should have a negative connotation because that original pure phrase of the authority of the believer was based in that concept, was take authority on earth in the spiritual space because there is a spiritual space. We do not fight against flesh and blood, but princes and principalities. And that's another whole thing we need to get
into.
That's
huge.
But, and so everything was like, you need to take authority as a believer in Jesus over any situation. And there's power in that, but the power is not in the believer. It's in Jesus.
Yeah.
And that's where that movement got it wrong. They got it wrong because they said the authority was in the believer speaking something, not in in the name that they were speaking.
Yeah.
And that's where it got confused. So me growing up, I feel like I got the more pure side of that. I actually did understand, like I did understand that. And there was some like hyper sides of it where faith got a little bit muddied of like how to use faith or what faith is, because of, as an extension of what was bad about the authority of the believer, but meaning like if you prayed for something and it didn't happen, you didn't have faith or you didn't have enough faith.
Yeah.
Like there was a certain measure of faith. And Jesus literally says, if you have the faith of the mustard of a mustard seed. Yeah. Mustard seed is so small. Yeah. So like the thing is like it's not your faith. Mm-hmm. It's his name.
Yeah.
And so yeah. That's the biggest thing. So like I feel like for me, I grew up with a clear understanding that there were spiritual things happening. Mm. That anytime I was dealing with something, there was a spiritual component to that. So for that, I'm grateful because I feel like I've always had a spiritual worldview that like no matter what was happening, I knew that there was a side of it that I couldn't see, but that the Lord could see and that that's where everything was actually really happening. Mm. Like all of the actual things, we were just seeing the byproduct of what was happening in a spiritual space.
Wow.
So I grew up with that view, which I feel like I still believe now in a very strong way.
Yeah.
But I can probably articulate why I believe that better than what I feel like I received was articulated to me. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that does make sense.
So, and that could just be a kid's memory. You know what I mean? Like Fair. They very well could have perfectly articulated all of that.
But only elements of it actually kept through.
Yeah, there was only so much like tangible things to hold on to and go, this is step A to step B to step C. So like for me, that was the biggest thing. So in that, I would say up until a year ago, to me, things that were happening, well, first of all, the only giants in the Bible was Goliath. Mm. And he was an anomaly.
Yeah.
That's it. That's all I knew is that like there was a big dude that David had to fight, and that was hard.
Yeah.
That's all I knew about giants in the Bible. And honestly, in antiquity, like I didn't really know anything about giants historically. Yeah. And that's like a big thing. But
what's funny with that, even biblically, and it's funny how, because I've said this many times, like how we read the Bible, we often don't read it based on what it says. We read it based on how we've been taught to read it.
Yeah.
And even with that, it's like, yeah, that was my mindset of it too. Like, oh, Goliath is the giant and that's it.
Right.
But then you actually go back and read it, and it's like, there's actually a lot of giants named in here.
Yeah. And like, and like bloodlines and like, what does all this stuff actually mean? Why does it even matter that, I think that's what, like going back to that simple statement of the written word of God, the spoken word of God. Yeah. Is as simple as it needs to be for us to find Jesus, but as complicated as the mystery of the God of the universe.
Yeah.
Because it's that idea. It's like, of course, like the Philistines were trying to take over Israel, and Israel needed to keep their land, and they sent their biggest guy.
Right.
That makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
And that doesn't distract me from finding Jesus.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It moves the story along.
Yeah.
So it's that simple.
Because, I mean, that's a big thing, too, is with the Old Testament. A lot of the stories in there talk about and have a focus on just the holiness of the Lord and who he is and his people. Where it's like, even David and Goliath, it's like, what's really the point of that story? Well, I guess one of the points, at least how I read it, is God's name will not be mocked.
Sure.
And that there's power in who God is.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, because I have a whole episode about even, like, the height differences of, you know, how tall I think David was versus how historically what we've been...
You did an episode on that, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But even with that, it's like, regardless, the point of the story is like, the name of the Lord is sacred.
Sure.
And it's holy.
Yeah.
And like, that's for me, when I read the Old Testament, that's a main message in there. Is just like, the Lord is not like the other gods.
Yes. And that honestly is the only thing that matters.
Yeah.
But let's talk about the stuff that's fun to talk about.
But yeah. And so, and that's where it gets really fun. Because I think a big thing with this is like, well, how do we talk about it when we don't really know what we're talking about?
Let me say this really quick, though, too, to wrap up all of that. Like, from being a kid.
Oh, yeah.
Here's
yeah.
my thing. If let's say I live to 90, 95 years old. Right. Let's say I live to 110. Who knows?
Let's go.
But
max it out 120. Let's go.
Max it out. That's a whole other conversation.
True.
Which actually is involved in this. But let's say I live there to that point. Well, I'm 35, about to be 35. So that there's a lot more life to live.
Yeah.
So if I'm supposed to be moving closer and closer to the Lord, then my faith, I have to be learning new things.
Hmm.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So like there has to be a greater depth day in and day out.
Hmm.
And in order for that to happen, I feel like the only way to do that is to dig deeper into the word. So like I started at the Bible as simple as it needs to be for me to find Jesus.
Yeah.
And the rest of my life is seeing how deep it goes.
Mm.
And to me, that's where I feel like this is interesting, is because I feel like even a year ago, I felt like I was at a place where I was like, how in the world does this get any deeper? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden another door opened up and I was like what in the world? To the point where I thought everything I've been told is a lie.
Yeah.
But the fact is it's not.
It's not. Yeah.
Everything that I was told was all I needed to know at the time.
Yeah.
And now I feel like I have this richness of reading the scripture in a whole new way.
Yeah.
And looking at history and all of that.
Well, that's a big, what you just said right there adds a lot of credence to me with this view of it. And it's that it never changed my theology, really.
Right.
As far as like the truths that I believe,
yeah,
it just reframed them,
sure,
into a spiritual worldview,
yeah, deepened like, them. Right?
Oh, whoa, yeah,
yeah.
It added more context to it, and it actually made more sense.
Yes,
because I mean, a lot of the stuff that Jesus does, that the apostles do, that the characters in the Old Testament do, it's like it doesn't really make a lot of sense all the time without a spiritual understanding.
Yeah, and the more you study in one space. You're like, wait, why did they say? Why does he say this?
Yeah,
and then the more you, the more that you like read through it, and then read back and read back and read back, you can only do that so many times before you're like, wait, he seems to be referencing something here that is not in the Bible.
It's not here. Yeah,
yeah, like he's saying something. I mean, the easiest example of that is Paul using philosophy that he would have learned in his, you know, Greek upbringing. His
Pharisaical time.
Yeah, but even pre that and like his family life and stuff like that. Like having the background of that. But like being able to kind of be Greek and Jewish at the same time.
Yeah.
Like he brings in phrases and things that are philosophical that are in the Bible.
Yeah.
And there's things in there that you're like, wait, this isn't Solomon. You know what I mean? Like he's not quoting Solomon. So
yeah,
like,
that's true.
And yeah. But I feel like that's one of the most fun things that I've heard over the last year, which is I think Dr. Michael Heiser, which is if something's weird in the Bible, it's probably important.
Yes, that's one of my favorite quotes from him.
Yeah, that's so that is him, right?
Yeah.
Okay,
that's him.
To me, that's like that's all I need to know. Yeah, I'm there. I'm in. Like, if something's weird in the Bible, it's probably important. Thank you.
Because
yes. I was always told it's not deeper than the surface.
Mm.
If it's weird in the Bible, you just don't understand it.
Yeah.
No, it's probably important, and we probably need to figure it out.
It's probably we haven't been paying attention to it is what it
is. Well, and that's the thing is, like, we don't need to figure it out. But if we do, there's something there to learn.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what you're saying.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so the big thing that I guess I wanted to talk about a little bit too is the
adding. Do we need to like start an episode two?
I think so. That's probably like a full episode.
How far in are we? How far in are we?
I don't. Let me look.
All right. So while Paul's looking, I feel like this is like more like the history, our history, before ever getting to the juiciness of.
It's true.
I want to say demons and tacos. Am I hungry?
That sounds delicious, though.
Wait, what?
If you had to guess, how long do you think we've been going?
I mean, I could say 35 minutes or an hour and a half.
Yeah, hour 20 minutes.
An hour 20?
Yeah.
Do you want to hit stop and do a second part?
Do you want to start a part two?
I'm down.
Okay.
I'm just getting started.
Because me too. But I think this is really important for what we're talking about.
It's definitely a setup.
Because I'll even say too, and I'm going to save this for an episode probably more in the future.
Yeah.
And it's really kind of giving some of my background and experiences. Because I grew up, I think my first supernatural encounter was probably 8 years old.
Okay.
So it's like, started early, and it was weird. And it was always one of the things that was very incongruent in my mind with what Scripture taught and what I was experiencing in real life.
Sure. What was that experience? You said you want to do an episode on it?
I probably will, because I can talk a lot about it. And that one, because that really led me down a path into... I'll talk around it right now, just because I think it's
more
important.
Of a testimony episode.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Well, let me... Maybe this is a good way to wrap this episode.
What I will say before we do that...
Okay.
is because for me, and this is why... I think it's important to say why I think this stuff is important.
Yeah,
and
I
want to talk beyond it's just cool.
Right.
Because I do really enjoy it. I think it's cool. But something that I said earlier and we kind of touched on is how willing people are to talk about it right now.
Sure.
And with that said, it's like, well, where can you get the information from? Now, luckily, there are a lot of smart people that are Christians that talk about it from a biblical side.
Yeah.
But for many people... they're not getting this information from church or from their pastors.
Yeah.
And the place that has the most information is like the New Age movement,
absolutely.
Which is where I found myself going when I was younger. And then out of that.
And I'll say from that, like I've heard a lot of people's testimonials that they were in New Age movement.
Yeah.
And then heard pastors talking about these things specifically.
Oh, wow.
And that was the gateway to then for them to be saved.
That's cool.
So like that's actually what I'm talking about is like,
that's cool.
And I feel like that's what you're saying is the importance of it is like, there is a depth there where people are going deep before ever finding Jesus.
Yeah.
And they're going deep into spiritual things.
Yep.
And so you can't go surface with people that are already deep.
Yeah.
You got to meet them down there.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's kind of terrifying. You got to do what Jesus did and go to Sheol.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's why for me, it's like, that's why I think it's important to talk about.
Yeah.
Because it was important for me, and I think it's going to be important for others. And that's why I think this episode is important for people that aren't there.
Sure.
It's like, let's help, let's not pull an Alex Jones and let's actually try to help you into this. Just journey a little
bit. I heard the CIA did set him up.
Did they really?
I did hear that.
Oh, that's awesome. There's that.
Yeah,
it kind of goes along.
We're not talking about Alex Jones. We're not talking about the CIA tonight.
Not tonight. But yeah, so what we're going to talk about to set up a little bit is I want to talk a little bit about the language of kind of adding some language to what we're talking about.
We could be a little bit more cerebral.
Yeah, because the supernatural world isn't as simple as angels, demons, God, the devil.
No, but it is more black and white than it exists.
Yes.
Because that's what I always felt like.
Because what happens is then we make it too confusing when it's actually not that confusing.
Right.
It is complicated.
Yes.
But it's not as complicated as like, there's not four characters. There's more than that.
Yeah.
But it's not like a whole unknowable thing. There are unknowable things.
Yeah,
really, things we don't know. I should say it that way.
And the truth is like I think about it this way, and I wasn't thinking about this until right now. Just popped in my head. I think what happens is I do not mind if there's a spider in my house as long as I don't see it.
Mm.
Because if I don't see it, it's not there. But a spider will eat roaches.
Yeah.
So like it does things that are helpful. Like there's things happening.
Oh, that's good.
But if I don't see it,
yeah,
I don't care about it. But if I see it, I want to kill it or get it out of my house.
Yeah, true.
You know what I mean?
True.
And I think a lot of spiritual things are like that.
Hmm.
Like we know that they're happening, but it's better if we just don't see it.
Yeah.
And as long as we can like stay away from it, we can still say, yeah. The world, everything is spiritual.
Hmm.
Like, yeah, like it's not like... there is this spiritual realm happening, and yes, like it's the devil attacking me when this happens, and that's not a wrong statement,
right?
But it's not correct.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like it's kind of a general statement that is not specifically true.
Yeah. Yeah.
So so even though it's not incorrect on a general level and might be more helpful for the individual going, I know that there's spiders around my house, but as long as I don't see them, they don't exist. Yeah. Or as long as I don't see them, they're not a problem to me.
Yeah.
So like until you have a spiritual confrontation, like a physical meets the spiritual realm confrontation, then it does exist, but it exists over there.
Yeah.
And it's not, then I don't even really need to think about it.
Yeah.
But as soon as it's actually physically spiritual realm invading physical realm, now all of a sudden let's talk about it. Because what is happening?
Yeah.
Like, and let's get this spider out of here.
And I think some spiders are coming out of the woodwork, and that's why people are interested to talk about it.
For sure.
And I think that's why this is great. And that was a really good analogy. I like that.
Did you, have you ever had an experience with a demon? We'll talk about that on the next episode.
Thank you guys for tuning in. It's so funny to stop it right here. And I'm not going to drag this on any longer just because I know we're about to keep talking, but you guys have to wait like 2 weeks to hear this.
At least.
And I'm so
We might talk for the next 2 weeks.
I think we might.
Cheers.
Cheers. We got a lot of Arnold Palmer. If you notice in the next episode that we're wearing the same clothes and drinking the same thing, it's because we are.
We might change or trade t-shirts just for fun.
We were matching earlier today, but then you...
I intentionally changed.
You switched. I was wondering if you would.
I thought that would be too weird.
That'd be fun. But anyway, thank you guys so much for tuning in. And I'll talk to you hopefully sooner rather than later.